Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello everyone, welcome back to another podcast. This time it's the Monaco GP, brought to you by our partners Yas Marina Circuit. I'm Matt.
I'm Jess.
I'm Jack.
I'm Tommy.
As you can see, that's not Alistair. That's Jack Aitken, ART F2 driver. How are you, Jack? You good?
I'm well. I'm dying of hay fever, but I'm well.
You are, yeah, you're not a cold. Hay fever, you've told me.
Yes.
I hear that you had an interesting journey on your way back from Monaco. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm still recovering. I only got back at 6 a.m. yesterday, because having left Monaco at about 9 o'clock, well, we were sat on the runway for 3 hours. Then we left, and then I got back, got on the train, which was the only train to London because it was so late, to St. Pancras. And then I forgot my bag on the train, which was going to Bedford.
You just left it on the train?
Just left it on the train. It wasn't even asleep or anything. I just walked off.
You didn't fancy it?
Didn't fancy it.
It's a big bag.
Yeah. It's now someone walking around with your overalls and helmet.
In, fully kitted out in Renault merch.
Driving for you next time, yeah?
Yeah. No, I had to... No, what was so bad was actually... I hung around the station and was like, I've left my bag on the train. Blah, blah, blah. Some helpful man located the bag, and then I had to go and get it from St. Albans. Shout out to my peeps in St. Albans. I was there for all of about 2 minutes on the platform, crying.
I saw your Instagram story. Was very, very tired.
That was my low. That was like, I realized that I was not going to get home for another 3 hours or so.
Yeah, you wanted to share it with everyone.
I felt like that was the only way I could manage.
Sharing pain, though.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
You're the relatable driver. It's not showing all the glamorous side. You're showing I've lost my bags. And
at 3 a.m. in St. Pancras, yeah.
But you got your bag back, so that's fine.
I did, yeah. I haven't got any sleep back yet, but working on that.
So we got you in really early today. You're really happy about that. Yeah. Awesome. We're here to talk about Monaco, obviously. Let's start with our three-word race reviews. Jack? Can you give us a three-word race review? Yeah, I know. I love it.
I love how you always go to the people that are the least prepared.
I think it's the best way. You know, you might come up with some random stuff.
Monaco Grand Prix. I did watch it.
You were there.
I watched it.
It's normally Ali's one.
Fantastic. Thanks for that, Jack. anyone going to come in with a three-word race review without saying the word boring? I think that's the challenge.
Why do I feel like that was aimed at me?
Yeah, because Jess said mundane last time.
Yeah. I feel like I'm going to have to mine to be a counter-argument to Jess's, so maybe you should go first.
Be prepared.
Because I know it's
going to
be, it was dull or something.
No, actually, okay. I think mine was going to be centred around Daniel.
Okay.
Mine and I don't want to say well done, Daniel, because that's what we always say. But to be honest, I didn't prepare either.
I didn't prepare.
Well,
didn't actually is two words.
Oh, yeah. Are we going to get into technicalities now?
Guys, we've done this every single time. Tommy. What about you, Tommy? I'm just giving myself loads of thinking time, but carry on, Tommy.
It was intriguing.
Oh. God, it was.
It's
every time, isn't it? We just fill those two words with it was and then a word. Oh, God.
Okay. I feel like that three-word race review was as boring as the race.
I'm going to go with not as bad.
No, I'd probably agree
as people
with
have
that.
Been saying. I will happily say that it wasn't particularly exciting.
It wasn't a classic.
But at the same time, I felt like I was watching it thinking, oh, this isn't great in terms of actual action, but it was the strategy. It was the fact that they were so close. You had the midfield teams, I mean, Stroll pitting and going 4 seconds a lap quicker, which in some ways kind of makes me think, oh, that's great, great. You know, oh, this is so cool. We don't know who's going to finish where. But at the same time, it felt quite artificial at the same time with Ricciardo being, you know, being what the commentator's saying, that he was babying his tyres, nursing it round.
It was simmering.
If he goes slower, it's better. Like
he was 9 seconds a lap slower than the quali time.
Yeah, just depressing.
Yeah, unfortunately, the tyres didn't work out how they expected it to. They bought the Hypersofts hoping that everyone would have to pit 100 times. And we said in the last race, like, oh, bring the soft tyres to Spain because it would make it exciting and stuff. Actually, this was the opposite way, where the tyres actually made it worse because everyone was just going, well, I need to stop again. It's not worth it. Mm. And everyone was just going really slow and just in cruise mode, so it didn't really work.
Yeah, it's the benefit of hindsight, isn't it, really? Like, you've got the fact that, you know, you think they're going to have to pit loads of times, but it's Monaco. You can go, as just say, 9 seconds a lap slower, and no one's going to get past you. You can have a 160 horsepower deficit, and you can't get past.
Yeah, running your car at 75% power, and literally, I mean, he did come under pressure. Daniel did come under pressure. Like, I don't want to take the victory away from him, because the fact that he got the car to the end, as like the engineers and people were saying, like, I don't know how you did it. But I think, again, like, that's typical of Monaco, in the fact that you can do that and still win the race. Is a bit, for me, it just, like, it just takes away from some of the racing, which is why I think I have a problem with Monaco, if we're gonna put it that way.
Let's not get into Jess's problem. Jack, did you?
Yeah, I was just going to say, Monaco's a special case in that sense, because you can, like you say, you can run 9 seconds a lap slower and just drive in the middle, and it's very difficult to overtake. So I think actually we're going to see a more interesting race next time out in Montreal.
Mm.
Not Monaco.
We're not going there again.
It's because they're going to bring the Hypersoft there, and that's a proper track, and it's actually quite hard on tyres. But yeah, Monaco is Monaco. I mean, it's all about track position. So teams are always going to try and limit pit stops as much as they can.
Now, it's unique though, isn't it? Like, because of that, like, that's what makes it such a special track. We won't go too much into arguing why it's good, but it is that special race where you know that it's got its unique characteristics that you can't overtake, and I think that's good for a world championship to have different tracks.
You need some variety.
Yeah,
it definitely brought variety, and I didn't even think about this, even though it's bloody obvious, but we've had 6 races, 3 different winners, each winning twice, which is, I don't think we've walked into this season thinking maybe that would happen. I think we
especially
thought it was going to be
Australia qualifying.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that and the fact that even though after Australia, we've said it numerous times now, we thought Ferrari were going to run away with it, even though they didn't come first or whatever. But it's good, and it's added. It was a race that Ferrari and Mercedes were very aware of the fact that they were not the leaders for, or like the best bet for winning the race, and Red Bull were, and they came out and showed why. But it's just, I don't know. Monaco really plays on my mind.
Like, I think about Monaco all the time.
No, because I understand that it's the jewel in the crown of F1. It's everything that F1 is.
Yes.
Glitz, glamour, money, business.
Amber Lounge.
Amber Lounge. The Amber Lounge isn't just at Monaco.
It's only at a few circuits, isn't it? I think it's Singapore and
Abu Dhabi.
Carringer, sorry.
But I don't know, like, as a fan, when you're at home watching and you don't get to be a part of that, I think it is very much kind of F1's business party. And it's difficult for fans to relate to that or to get on board. And when the racing is like it was on Sunday, like, I always judge a race by how many times did I jump on social media? How many times did I feel like I could not watch the screen right now and still know what was going on and kind of just listen for any yells from the commentators, which is kind of what we spoke about last time in Spain. But I kept looking at the lap counter going, how are we only on lap 35? How are we only halfway through? It was a really drawn out race, and it kind of upsets me when we did have all of these cool things going on, like Daniel was out of power, Bottas was on the right tyre strategy, You know, you had Max flying through the pack, and but none of that mattered.
Yeah, none of it came. None to of fruition, it mattered.
You had Lewis losing tires and complaining the entire race, like not looking happy.
God, he was terrible,
not
wasn't he?
Looking happy at all.
Who was worse, Lance Stroll or Lewis Hamilton? Like, Jesus.
I don't know. I think. I mean, yes, Hamilton definitely crybabying his whole way around, but Lance Stroll coming out and saying, what's even the point?
Get in the pit,
I'd have loved so. Mercedes to have, because Hamilton lost that race, didn't he, when he pitted that second time. I'd have loved Mercedes going, all right, come on then. Come on, Lewis, get in the pits if you really want new tyres. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, sorry, you lost the race. Oh. My bad.
You're ninth
now.
There was a lot of fans, you mentioned, Jess, you know, a lot of fans not liking it, and we had a lot of three-word race reviews from fans not particularly happy. DXN 11 Babas, meh, classic Monaco. MK Lowry KM, Monaco doesn't work. Max Nelson, literally nothing happened. Puma Racing, worse than Korea.
Worse than Korea.
Worse than Korea. I thought that was quite funny.
But from I was going to say from
yeah.
Steady. But can I, on a serious note, just to jump in about Monaco, I agree. It wasn't a great race, and I was watching from the Renault garage, actually, so I didn't have the joy of Lance and Lewis's team radio, because we don't listen to the TV commentary, but it was, I don't know, for me, Monaco is just such a special place, not because of the glitz and glamour, a little bit, but more because it's been there since the beginning of Formula One, and there are fewer and fewer tracks now which are like that, so it's important to keep the ones that are. And as well, it's just such a massive challenge as a driver. You know, there is no other track like Monaco. You have street circuits, of course, like Singapore, and partially Yas Marina, Baku, but it's just not the same. It's nowhere near the same.
Yeah.
You know, it's so narrow. It's so tight. Yeah. You've got bumps all the way around the track. You're driving, you know, next to massive five-star hotels, the marina. You're going around swimming pools.
One of the best corners.
Nothing like that. Well. And, you know, it was my first time in Monaco this weekend driving. And it's true that once you get into it, you just see it as a racetrack. You only see the barriers and your kind of tunnel vision to an extent. But
yeah, because there's a tunnel. Nice.
just on the
Sorry,
same wave.
I had to.
Quiet.
Hush, child.
No, but it's the first laps I did, it was literally just like I was sightseeing. I was just like, this is unbelievable. And yes, the race is very difficult. Even F2, you know, we're like known for overtaking, crashing, generally causing excitement. We had zero on-track overtakes in our feature race.
Yeah.
It was still quite an exciting race, but overtaking is just impossible. And the people that did try crashed.
Yeah.
That's probably the main difference to F1. They're just smart enough to know that you can't really do it. But I think, you know, tracks like that, you've got to keep in the calendar.
Yeah. There's never that much overtaking anyway, though, really, like in Monaco.
No, but it's true that you can have a race with intrigue that's interesting, but there isn't necessarily on-track overtaking. I mean, if you'd seen different strategies for the leaders with tyres, that actually could have made a difference. It wasn't really set up for that this weekend, but you know, like in the F2 race, you did actually have that to an extent where you had lead changes because of strategy and pit stop and undercuts, overcuts, you know, and there's a tension to that when they do the pit stop, etc. So you can have it. It's just very difficult.
I guess the argument is that 2016 was perfect case in that Daniel should have won that Grand Prix, but because Red Bull weren't ready, he lost it. But yeah, I just think it was just really frustrating as a fan to watch and see all these amazing strategies that could happen and then none of them cause any effect whatsoever. Like none. Like not even like, I mean, there obviously were a few, you know, changing in the midfield, but up front, like you saw Vettel push and then all of a sudden he was 3 seconds off and you're kind of like, what the, Daniel's going at 75%? Yeah. How is this not, like, how? I mean, I guess the only saving grace and that it did show that you could overtake was Max. And again, it's like how much of that was, you know, taking advantage of slower midfield cars. Yeah. But I still think he made And track. Oh, Jack wants to go controversial already.
I'm sorry.
Track limits.
Yeah,
just backing my man, Carlos.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was on a Renault, remember?
That was, yeah, but to be honest, like they, I think they were both of, so Max's first attempt on Carlos and then the second one that he made stick, both of those super controversial in terms of what was okay and what was not. Like, so the first one, Carlos ran off, right?
Yeah, they went in side by side and Carlos straight lined it to keep the position. Although he would argue that he was pushed out by Max because Max broke very late.
Yeah, I mean, Max completely shut the door.
Like, yeah, did Max even make the chicane that lap? Did he cut across the small?
He cut across it, I think.
Very clumsily, like the second time where he just sort of
The second over. Time was even funnier because he literally did just go, right, Carlos, you're going that way, and I'm taking that position back.
It was
a good
move in the sense that he was fully committed. Yeah. Like, you could tell he was just going to go for
it. Really? Max committed? Really? does he ever not commit to a move?
There you go. Yeah. But yeah, it's just like, I don't know. It's a tough one because the context makes it more difficult because you had the previous move where Carlos went off the track, so the stewards probably weighed that into their decision, but if you look at it as an isolated incident.
Yeah, I can't tell if Max's second move was he more concerned about him not being in the same position and having to give the place back to Sainz? Because he literally just went, technically I'm still on the track because I'm going over the apex.
But he didn't make the corner, no.
But he didn't make the corner. Because, and he shut the door. Like, there was nowhere for Carlos to go. Absolutely nowhere for him to go.
I mean, the curb isn't part of the track. His thinking was, I'm not going to make the corner. Usually in that position, a driver's just going to straight line it because you're going to damage the car if you do that a lot. And he was quite desperate, I think, at that point. So he just absolutely pulled on the anchors and just tried anyway and just went over the curb. And he was off the track, like, but at least that way it looked a bit more presentable than if he just went straight through the chicane and didn't even try it. So,
and without Max, we probably wouldn't have seen many overtakes at all during the race, would we? We've had a few questions in about Monaco and what could be changed, etc. Kirky Life, or at Kirky Life, says, is it time to leave Monaco in the past? How long will "but it's Monaco" be used as an excuse for a boring Grand Prix? And just for my piece on what you guys were discussing, I'm kind of half and half. I understand the racing driver's perspective, you know, and seeing the onboards of Monaco is the most prestigious historical thing. You know, we don't want to lose Monaco, but at the same time, the sport is very much in a phase where trying to get more fans involved. And if I'm a new fan tuning into Monaco, I'm like, what's
going on?
F1's
got
boring.
To buy into the history.
I think that's
prestige.
The opposite, to be honest.
Yeah. Everyone knows about the Monaco Grand Prix.
Yeah.
You talk to a guy out in the street and you say, you ask him about F1 in Monaco, they're probably going to know about it. Whereas, you know, you say F1 in Germany or Silverstone or wherever.
But I think we're talking about it from a spectator's point of view.
From an entertainment perspective.
Yeah, if you turned it on and watched it, you'd probably be like me, like, why are there 70-odd laps? Like, this is really dull. Nothing's happening. Why is nothing happening? And I guess we've said it before, like, F1 is quite a difficult sport to get into anyway. So if you've got a Grand Prix where people are talking about, oh, this is exciting because this could play out, and then you don't see it play out, or it seems to have no effect, then I can perfectly understand why people would turn around and go, F1 is boring. We know it's not, but
there are a lot of factors that could have made that race really good, though, and I think the problem was, it was just very unfortunate that the whole race was kind of intriguing, and you were like, oh, it's going to build up to this massive finale where Vettel's all over the back of it. But realistically, Vettel's got a title to think about. He was never going to make a stupid move. You could argue we're actually robbed of, if Max hadn't binned it in the wall in practice and he was the one behind Ricciardo, or even if it was the opposite, Vettel was the one in front and Ricciardo behind him, he'd have definitely gone for it because the Red Bulls are well known for just YOLO, I'm going for it.
Yeah.
So that would have been a lot better, but
it's the gift of hindsight again, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because
we
said the same thing like about previous races, and the fact of the matter is Max did bin it.
Yeah.
And, and, you know,
Max binned it, Tommy, did you
again,
know? Did you know?
Yeah. Got that prediction a bit wrong, didn't I? I did say Red Bull would be quickest. Me and Ali said Red Bull quickest.
You did.
So,
you did.
And you mocked us.
Ali has his hands up in the air.
I don't think we mocked you.
I think you mocked us a little bit.
But
we just picked the driver that crashes all the time instead of the consistent one that was probably going to win Monaco.
You were blinded by your
money. Again, I think this Grand Prix really differentiated the Red Bull drivers. You know, you've got Max, who is quickest. He is exciting and he's daring and he makes the moves that, again, we've said this tons of times before, that nobody else will make, but he makes mistakes. And then you've got Daniel, who is a great driver, but showed that, like, patience and sense and smarts can win you Grand Prix, not just being quick. And, you know, everybody keeps talking. I mean, Christian Horner was asked, is this the catalyst for Max? But we said that about previous Grand Prix, that surely this is the moment where Max decides he's going to calm down and just get the car home rather than being the hero, but which is currently putting him at a bit of a zero. Because, you know, we've said, again, we keep repeating ourselves, but it'd be brilliant if Max could take it to the top guys. Like, it would be such an exciting race to watch, but he's not giving us those opportunities because he keeps making mistakes. And it's just, it's again, like, is it experience? Is it just hot-headedness? Is he just, like, not got his head in the game? I'm not sure. I don't think we'll ever really know. But, I mean, from a driver's perspective, what can Max do? Or is he doing all the right things anyway? He just needs to get a break, or...
That's what a fan actually asked. Yeah, from Megan Cantle 99. It's as if you're the same person, Jess. Max seems to be in a bit of a rut at the minute. What do you think he needs to do to get out of it? And has there ever been a point in your career where you've experienced something similar, Jack Aitken?
Yeah, it's
that sounded very formal.
No, it's really tough. I mean, from my perspective, I think it's difficult when team managers say, this is going to be the moment when he learns. As a driver, it's not like you have settings where you're like, okay, I'm going to turn the risk down from 50 to 29 or thing. It doesn't really, you can't do that. No. It's a bit of a mindset, but it's very, especially around Monaco, it would be very difficult for him to come in and think, okay, well, I've had a couple of crashes this season, I've made some mistakes, I'm just going to kind of take it a little bit easy. As soon as you start to do that, you're driving in a completely different way to what you're used to, and you're just never going to be in a rhythm, and that's absolutely crucial around Monaco. And they had a race-winning car this weekend. Mm-hmm. So if there's any time when you're going to say you risk it for the chocolate biscuit, this is the race. And I don't know if you guys saw Ricardo's pole lap. I watched that last night when I got back, and I was watching it and with my mum, and I said, there's so few times when you watch a pole lap, because I usually watch all of them, and you're like, usually you watch it and you think, okay, yeah, that's, you know, he's done a properly good lap, but, you know, there's, you know, he's missed the apex there a little bit. He's made a couple of small mistakes. There are some corrections there. You can see where he's kind of working on adjusting things as he goes, which is normal. And that's kind of what you expect. And as an athlete, driver, whatever, we are athletes. We're athletes. As a driver, it's normal. You know, all top level drivers can sort of see what's going on during the lap. Ricardo's lap, yesterday, I watched it, and I kid you not, the first seven corners, I think we're probably nigh on perfect, like genuinely just, you look at that and you think, A, how did he do that? But B, no way you can improve on it.
Yeah.
And he was so close to the barriers, just kissing everything beautifully. And it was just mega. And then the rest of the lap was really good as well, but particularly the start of
where
the
lap. Where was the mistakes, Jack? The first seven corners.
Well, Daniel. And, no, but the point of that was for Max to back off. We might be sitting here and he'd not crashed. He might have finished second or third. Mm-hmm. And he'd been 3, 4, 5 tenths off Ricardo. We'd still be saying he's in a bit of a rut. You know, he's slower than Danny Ric when he's usually been quicker. So it's a really tough position to be in. I've been in that position before. It's a little bit different, though, as a young driver coming up. Because as soon as you're in that position, a lot of the time, you're not given the chance to recover. You're kind of cast off and disregarded. Whereas he's in the position of having a contract sorted. Mm-hmm. So he's got a little bit of that confidence behind him, and he's got that in the back pocket. Red Bull, realistically, even if he carries on like this for some time, they're probably still going to put their faith in him.
Yeah.
And they've got no one to There's no one coming up yet.
But that, so kind of leading on from that is there's been a lot of discussion about Hartley and if he's going to be staying at Toro Rosso.
Just looking at Ali behind the camera.
Ali behind the camera is like, don't you touch my work drivers. Because apparently word in the paddock is that Wehrlein could come in to replace Hartley.
Absolutely.
And again, I think he had a really unlucky... I mean, this is the thing. I think it's really easy to forget that there are only... As a driver, there are only certain variables that you can control. I'm speaking as a driver, obviously.
Please butt in at any point.
No, you're on track.
Luck.
The puns today.
That's worse than mine.
Jeez. What was that? So I think luck has a big thing to do with it. You know, the car's performance is something that you only have a slight input in, right? I mean, if it breaks on track, sorry, Jack.
Christ.
Or if someone hits into you like Hartley had, you know, there's nothing you can do about that. He didn't do anything wrong.
Maybe he shouldn't have had front wing damage, then maybe he wouldn't be caught by Charles Leclerc and he'd be fine.
I mean, true. I was going to say driver of the day for you, Matty, kind of jumping ahead. Is it Charles?
No, it's
because he controlled his brake failure so beautifully.
He did do very well not to end up in the harbour, just saying.
But yeah, I mean, it must be, as a driver, again, speaking on your guys' behalf, it must be like quite a worrying position to be in when you're literally doing everything you can and it's stuff like that all of a sudden people are looking at you and going, well, you have no value to me anymore because you're not scoring points.
Yeah, that's the brutal thing of F1.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you can do things about it. I mean, I'm trying to think of examples where it hasn't turned out badly and I'm struggling. But there are drivers where, if you're leading the race and you're absolutely dominating and then you get a car failure, you're not going to be ridiculed in the paddock. You know, people will recognize that. And I think it's a little bit about how you take it. Some people take it a lot more personally. Others tend to say, oh, it's not in my control, I don't mind. And yeah, a lot of people let it affect their driving in the end as well, which is what you really have to avoid. If you're getting mechanicals and DNFing, you can't then a lot of people then try harder and get really worked up about it, and that doesn't usually work out well. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, Wehrlein, you could say, is going back to that. I haven't heard that particular rumor, but I've heard for a while that Hartley's under a lot of pressure. It'd be interesting to see Wehrlein back, because some would say he never really got a proper chance, not in a true midfield car, you'd say.
Yeah. And I think, especially when Gasly's doing as well as he is.
Mm-hmm. Gasly was amazing again, wasn't he, in that race?
Yeah.
So he's just trouncing Hartley realistically.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, because at the start of the year, it was quite marked that Hartley was actually sometimes out qualifying him, occasionally was beating him in the races and being quicker than him in practice. And, you know, being a WEC driver, it's not really something you would expect.
Look to Ali.
But seriously, because Gasly has come through the junior formula system in like a very sort of textbook way. He's done on GP2. He won GP2. And he was a reserve driver for a while, did a lot of testing for Red Bull and Toro Rosso. So he's probably one of the most experienced rookies that you would get on the grid now. And Hartley just sailed in and started out-qualifying him, which was unbelievable. But now it's sort of things are starting to come back to what you'd expect.
Other standout performances, Esteban Ocon.
Yeah,
definitely. Yep.
What a good race. Although, again, like, it seems to be that P6 is no man's land, because the top three teams. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, he was putting in good lap times because he didn't have anyone around him. It's
definitely like Formula A and Formula B at the moment. Like, even with Ricciardo's problem, still can't get anywhere near Red Bull Ferrari. Like Hamilton with his tyre problems, there's still that huge gap.
I mean, not Ocon, for Monaco, because I mean, Esteban was literally behind Bottas at the end of the race, but I know what you mean in terms
just
of...
Just about, but yeah. I think because everyone was really... Ricciardo was struggling, everyone was struggling with their tyres, they were in safe mode.
At the same time, Esteban was buzzing after the end of the race, wasn't
he? Yeah, after the safety car, they pulled away again from Ocon. And it's like, oh, okay then.
Yeah.
But yeah, he did a really good job. He went. He was way ahead of all the other midfield runners.
Yeah, Perez was nowhere.
Not really. He was stuck in the Hartley train for a while though.
Yeah. Hartley train.
Yeah, that Ali struggle. Well, yeah, but he was literally 3 seconds off the pace at one point in the middle of the race. I think Charles Leclerc said something that they. It's quite possible that Toro Rosso were playing a bit of a strategic game to give Gasly that gap to pit back into.
Yeah, and again, talking of WEC trains, Hülkenberg was causing some mayhem too. I mean, I think at one point he had it from 7th to 12th were all in, like they were all, because Max was talking about, we can't move, it's so slow, it's too slow, and it was because Hülkenberg hadn't pitted yet, and he was backing up the entire rest of the
I like that about Monaco, even though, like, just seeing a train of cars, because you never see F1 cars that close, and even when they're just
like
in a massive...
I don't like seeing a train of F1 cars knowing that they're not going to overtake each other.
Yeah, but you never know. They will,
because, like, people did have a go. And
if we want processions, we'd go to displays.
Yeah, let's go to F1 Live again.
Yeah.
Which was probably more overtaking there. Let's look towards Canada now. Mercedes were clearly third best around Monaco. I have a feeling that they'll be potentially back to the top in Canada. What do you think, Jack, being a racing driver?
Canada's a place where Mercedes have had quite a lot of problems in the past. But, yeah, you'd expect it to play into their hands. Canada's quite interesting because on the surface, it's a power track because you've got that massive back straight and there's a lot of sort of short but quite quick straights in the middle between relatively quick chicanes. But what that means as well is it's actually a lot about how you put the power down. So if you have a car that's not great traction-wise, all of those straights in the middle of the track where you're coming out of chicanes, you're going to lose a lot of time. So it's why I think in the past you've seen Red Bull actually not be so bad there.
Yeah. Let's get a prediction from you, Jack.
I know you want cold, hard predictions.
Podcast, but I want a top three from you.
I'm going to say Hamilton back on top. I reckon he's going to bounce back.
I was surprised. I wasn't expecting you to say Lewis.
I should have added the caveat that it's still a power track. And Mercedes are, I think, they're... I can't see Ferrari being quickest at Canada just because they don't, in my opinion, have the best chassis and they also don't have the best power unit at the moment. So I think it's either going to be Mercedes or maybe Red Bull, but I think it's less likely. So I'd say Hamilton, Vettel, Bottas.
Okay.
Quite a standard top three, after all the madness of the Monaco Grand Prix and last couple races, I think back to status quo a little bit.
Tommy?
I'm going to say Hamilton as well. I think has he won it seven times? Six, seven times?
Yeah.
He wins Canada a lot. I'm hoping it does go back where, like you say, you've had two winners from each team. Sorry, a winner from each team, and it keeps changing between the teams. I think Hamilton will get the win. Go Ricciardo second and Ocon third.
What?
Okay.
Sorry. I'm hoping the hype is soft. Hoping a safety car and the hype is soft. And at least making an interesting prediction.
If Ocon finishes third, I will eat my hat.
Eat that Yas Marina hat.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. We'll keep you to that.
Okay.
Jess?
I'm gonna follow the general consensus and put Hamilton in for a win. I think Vettel, and then I'm gonna go for Max. Let's put Max in third.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna back Bottas to come back stronger than he was in Monaco and take the win. I think it'll be a Mercedes 1-2. I think Canada, if there's a track that Bottas is going to beat Hamilton, it'll be Canada, potentially. I know Hamilton's really good around Canada, but at the same time, there's not too many variables around Canada compared to other probably more skilled tracks. I don't know. I've never driven around Canada. I don't know
Me
if
neither.
That's a fair point. But I feel like Canada's a more simpler track for Bottas to be up there and on the pace. Well, with
remember,
Hamilton.
He had that really great qualifying in 2013.
Oh, when he was with Williams, yeah.
Yeah, he was on the front row or third. So he's not bad around there.
Yeah. So Bottas, Hamilton, and then Vettel. gosh, it's not a particularly exciting prediction. And I want Ocon to finish third. I just don't think he will. I think before we end this podcast, we should maybe chat a little bit about IndyCar, at least mention it, that it happened. Because,
yes.
Well, I mean, I didn't watch it. Jess hasn't watched it. But you two watched it, and we saw one move of Alexander Rossi, which was amazing. Any word on IndyCar, guys?
I mean, yeah, it was good. Another good race. It's funny because since Alonso did the Indy 500, a lot of people have started to have their eye on it now. And it, always after Monaco, despite liking Monaco, everyone, you know, I'm one of those people that looks forward to the Indy 500 a lot more than Monaco because it seems to just deliver every year. You get a lot of passing and a dramatic finish, and yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I watched half of the second half because this was during my wait at the airport, so had nothing.
Do you want to tell us about that again, Jack?
No, don't. That's not really
cue sad music. it was actually a good race. I mean, I was quite surprised. Some of the big contenders crashed out fairly early on.
Yeah.
I mean, you had people like Castroneves crashed out.
Castroneves.
Canaan.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly the rest, but yeah, it seemed like the new car was really difficult to handle. Mm. But yeah, Rossi, that was epic. I watched that live, and I think we were on board with one of the other cars who were just in a melee fighting with the other guys. And you're thinking, these guys are at 220 miles an hour fighting like with probably less than a meter between each other, and they're all like jostling for position. And then suddenly this guy just cruises around the outside and just overtakes a lot of them. And you see from his onboard, and he's gone for a gap which is like IndyCar sized. And just got it perfect.
Because if he goes any wider, he's on the marbles and he's in the wall.
It was in the wall. Like it was wall car, and that was pretty
epic.
It's
like the opposite of Monaco, isn't it? Where you actually had so many on-track passes. Everyone can pass. And even at the end, because of the way the fuel strategy pans out, you actually had three complete underdogs. And Stefan Wilson, who was Justin Wilson's younger brother, who's like running his car as like a tribute to his brother. He was five laps from winning the race, and he just enters that race for a bit of
That was because it's like you say, it's a great story at the end of the race. Yeah. That's kind of what we were missing from the Monaco Grand Prix, because strategy wise you could have had that, but you had these guys top three needed really on the edge for fuel, needed to pit maybe, and then the quicker guys behind them, and then two of them just pitted, and it was like, at least try.
Yeah, at least run out of
have
fuel,
a go. Yeah.
Rossi,
I mean,
won, didn't
you? You don't know the situation, but it might have been that Wilson was literally about to run out of fuel and fine. But it was a little bit disappointing to see them pit with two laps to go when you're leading the Indy 500. It's like,
because a caution could have come out and
anything could
happen. Keep going.
Yeah,
push the car around.
Yeah, literally roll across the line.
Because it would have, like, even if they ran out of fuel a lap before the end, and it's like you weren't even close. That still would have been a better story than just boxing.
Yeah, definitely. Agreed.
Cool. Indy covered.
Do you have any comments on that, guys?
Well, yeah, no, really.
Was it as exciting as previous Indies? Because the general feeling I got was that it wasn't like...
The end was quite anticlimactic.
Yeah.
Because you had two late cautions, and you're like, suddenly it brought this whole other strategy into play, which wasn't before. And everyone was... It was a long yellow as well. It was like four or five laps or something. I'm probably wrong. It was probably longer. But it was long enough that Twitter was basically exploding. Everyone was like, the showdown's going to happen. It's going to be the strategy versus that. And then they just pitted, and it's like, oh.
The fact that an anti-climax race is a lead change with five laps to go kind of tells you how awesome that race is normally. But
the greatest spectacle on earth.
Not Monaco. Cool.
Such an American... turn of phrases, isn't it?
I know.
There's a place for America, and I don't know. I kind of do. It's like going off topic a little bit. But while I was watching the Indy 500, I was just reminded how much I love American advertising.
Yes,
so
amazing.
Great. It's
so
just like the cheesy infomercials. I'm just like, I love it. Give me more.
Is that or like, you're gonna die? Did you take this drug 10 years ago? You're gonna die.
Yeah.
That
it's
seems to be the general consensus.
So if anyone who's not American now knows what American advertising is like, that's actually it for our time. It's flown by. Jack, thank you so much for coming along.
Anytime.
Just want to quickly ask this question before we finish. Marty Ruiz Marcel, why are you so handsome?
Blushes. Yeah.
Didn't mention that to me before the podcast or anything. That's fine.
I'll give you your $5
later.
Who's your best friend on the F2 grid from Warrior Shoke? Very quickly.
Choices.
Ali's been messaging me going, 1 minute left, 0 minutes left, minus 1 minute left. Carry on.
Best friend on the F2 grid.
Quick.
I'm going to make enemies. Probably, I kind of have to say my teammate, George. That's the rules. No. Yeah. No, actually, all the British drivers are really close. Like me, George, Alex Albon, even though he races under a Thai license. We travel a lot together and know each other quite well. So.
Squad.
Yeah. And Jake Hughes, shout out from GP3, my boy.
And well, Jake, a lot of people Jake are your Dennis, boys in this
A lot
podcast.
Of Jakes, yeah.
Oh my God, we need to do a video on the squad.
Yes.
That would be
the
so
squad
good.
Squad to get God. Sound like some sort of music video.
Carnage.
And finally, at Gabriel_Agren, this is going to be raging that I'm gone about 3 minutes over. What's the biggest and hardest difference to adapt to whilst driving a Formula One car? Go in.
G-force. Just the sheer. Because the step up from F2 to F1 is a lot bigger than it's been in the past. Because F2 used to be the same speed it is, or even quicker than it is now, and F1's just got quicker. So when I got in the car in Barcelona, it was literally like my body was just being dragged this way and that. You get used to it,
yeah.
But it is quite shocking the first time you go full speed around turn three, nearly flat or flat, and it's just yanking you out of your seat, and you're like, this is awesome.
So next year, neck bigger than legs, yeah.
Yep, has to be.
We'll have to do neck measuring on the next podcast.
My neck was floppy the next time.
So that has been the Monaco GP podcast. Thank you, Jack, for joining us and all that good stuff. Anytime. And obviously, Jess and Tommy as well, and myself. And we'll see you next time for Canada.
You didn't look sure about that.
I was like, what have we spoken about? Canada. Canada. That's the
Where
one.
Are we?
Definitely going to be a better race. I'm saying it right here, right now.
Yeah.
100%.
Controversial.
You'd hope so.
Monaco should be put in the bin. Goodbye! Recycling bin? Everyone wave, it's the end of the podcast.
I literally don't know what to do with this.
Okay, not in the bin, but in the nice historical cabinet. Bye.
Oh my God.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.